Welcome to the PS Insights podcast series sponsored by Kimball Applications. Professional services organizations strive for efficiency, success, and growth. This series is intended to provide key insights on how to achieve this from industry leaders.
Hello, my name is Ian Murphy, and today I'm talking with Mark LaCroix about industry-leading practices for resourcing in mid to large professional services organizations. Mark is a founding partner at RTM Consulting, a firm that specializes in helping service organizations get better at what they do. He has worked with many global clients to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of service delivery organizations, with extra emphasis on strategy, resource management, project delivery, and PS automation. For nearly 10 years at RTMC, Mark has developed a strong track record of transforming services organizations.
Thanks, Ian. It's good to be with you today and very excited to be talking about this topic of resource management. Our company's been around for over 10 years. I've been there that long, and resource management has always been one of our primary focuses. We've seen the evolution of how organizations have improved this, but still a long way to go. What we believe to be the most important asset of a service delivery organization, which is their people, their human capital. What more important thing to get right than that part of your business?
What are the major challenges companies face when it comes to predictive resource allocation?
I usually talk in two terms. One is, at what point is your scale too big for a spreadsheet? That number is really small. 10 people, 15, 20 people. At any point beyond that, it gets a little unwieldy. The other thing is that organizations tend to start more organically with resource management through basic staffing. Hey, we need to know who's going where tomorrow or the next day or the next week. They get caught in that trap for longer than they should. Where they need to go is, we need to see what's happening next month, next quarter. We need better tools, better information, better ways to treat that information to really know what are my needs in 3 months and 4 months. That is one of the bigger gaps that still my clients and clients I come in contact with fall short of.
How do companies reconcile that difference between the selling and provisioning of resources?
Very difficult area. There's two parts to it. One is the cultural and organizational aspect. Oftentimes my clients will say, I can't get sales to do what I want them to do, which is an understandable thing. Not that it's intentional or malicious, but sales is sales and services is services. The idea that we have to influence or change the sales team is a little misguided. What we need is their information, and what we need is their information to be somewhat directionally accurate so that we can build off that information and figure out what that means to us. Two things solve that. One is a degree of automation. They have their systems, CRM. We have our systems, PSA. We need those two systems to help make this job easier by synthesizing that data and aligning that data. The second part is we have to take that information from sales and turn it into information that's useful to us. So when I give you a $100,000 opportunity, that's all the salespeople care about is the number. What we care about is that $100,000 is made up of four people working for 2 months at this duration of these roles. It's incumbent upon us to be able to translate that. Now we have meaningful future-looking data that we can work with for resource management.
Is a two-way integration required to prevent the overselling of resources?
In my world, there's no such thing as overselling resources, because resource management done well is a continually fluctuating capacity model. We never want to put a lid on how much demand sales and other people can generate. What we want to be able to do is rapidly adapt to the demand. When we think of forecasting and looking into the future, we always think of the scenario where we never have enough. But we also have scenarios where we have too many, and we have to make decisions about how to redirect some of our resources to more productive means. It really goes both ways when it comes to managing capacity. I do believe it's a little more one-way street in that we really want to adapt and understand the demand and appropriately align our team members and our resources to meet that demand, whether it's surging or whether it's ebbing a little bit as well.
How do we get HR involved in PSA?
I didn't highlight our just-in-time resourcing enough. That's one of our primary methodology that we employ with our resource management consulting. One of the spokes on the wheel of that framework is sourcing of resources. And what I tell people that we consult with or train is that what sourcing strategy is the best for you? I say all of them. all of them meaning you should always be actively recruiting and warm recruiting for some of your consistent and persistent needs. You should have a well-established partner network and or subcontractor base that you can draw from and flux up and flux down. You should be continually looking at reskilling and developing your own talent to direct them to some of the new areas that seem to be hot. Some companies sell multiple solutions or multiple capabilities, and that changes. Once you get that capacity view of the future, part of your interpretation of that is not just how many do I need, but what kind. And based on your overall strategy, you may not simply want to hire. You want to have that right mix of partner hiring as well as figuring out how you can repurpose people as well.
How are you seeing companies managing the impact of reskilling?
It definitely depends on market conditions. I see it because we work a lot with software and hardware technology companies in the shifting of technology itself. I've got a few clients who are in the infrastructure space and help with those IT services, and virtualization of those environments is a game changer. Moving away from heavy premise-based to more virtualized and cloud and hybrid clouds has really changed the game on the kinds of people they need. New technologies coming in very rapidly in this space, as well as big data. And so they're looking at team members that have been around for 10 years that are very talented but have just been not exposed to this whole new area. Those are the areas I see it most. Other areas, I think you leverage a skills database that really needs to be automated. Again, an area where spreadsheets just don't work at any scale. They're looking at ways to say, well, how do we get more diversification of people? How do we cross-skill so that we're not trying to shift a person from where they are today to tomorrow, but we need more diversity. We're a smaller shop maybe that needs to have more capability and have people that are more diverse in what they can do for us. It gives us more flexibility and resource management if a person can do A, B, and C versus just A.
How should companies manage the cost of having to suddenly acquire additional resources to fill a gap in their project schedule?
If you're in reactionary mode, if you are scrambling on a Friday afternoon to figure out who's going to be on the project on Monday, inevitably you're going to be making some poor decisions relative to the wrong cost. You're probably using maybe partners that are more expensive, or you're getting the senior person when you should be, or you sold the junior person. The other part of it is not just, I'll say, poor practices and processes, but I do think that this is where PSA and Kimball come in strongly, is they're able to present that information at the point of attack, at the point of making those resourcing decisions. It's right there. If you've done your job, you know exactly the relative cost of the people that you're choosing among, and that should be a factor in the staffing decision itself. Oftentimes, if you don't have that information, people know that there's a little bit of an implication, but they won't start seeing it until the time comes in and the budget starts tallying up, and then they realize, wow, this person is 25% more expensive than we planned, and that can add up very quickly. It's critical to have that information about your resources at the point of decision-making and at the point of staffing. Now, you still may have to resort to putting in the more senior person because no one else is available, but you're going to probably tag that for replacement or backfill as quickly as you can in many cases.
How much detail should companies have when it comes to the cost of an individual resource?
What we advise, and I know that when we work with Kimball, Kimball advises this as well, is don't get it down to the exact amount of cost. We try to get folks to think in terms of bands and generalized cost rates for a couple reasons. One, you want to give the project managers and the people that are responsible for these projects and putting people on it in those budgets. Many people are reticent to create equivalent one-for-one. Hey, I can derive what your salary is based on what your cost is. And most folks are very skittish about doing that. The natural answer is to assign a cost to a band of resources so that you smooth over and generalize what their costs are. With that goes not getting into too much of the weeds of exactly what the fine-tuned cost is, but just to know that directionally correct, plus or minus a certain tolerance, that we're in the right band, we're in the right range for where we want resources. And normally with roles and people that get staffed to projects, I would say you're staffing across maybe five bands, maybe more, but I commonly see five levels of cost in your core of all the roles that you staff. And you're not overcomplicating it. You're trying to keep it somewhat straightforward and simple. On the back end, you could take longer-term strategies that say, you know what, we need to dial up or dial out our use of partners. But when it comes to your staff and their costs, it's easier to keep it somewhat stratified and simple.
What can companies do to prevent shortage of resources?
Comes back to definitely interpreting the future, getting the future and interpreting it. 80%, 85% of your future work is tied up in the project plans of your projects. That should be in-house, and you should be getting the project leaders and managers to effectively plan out their projects well and knowing what the resource requirements are. The other 15 to 20% is your sales data. It is your inbound demand. That is definitely trickier. It's a smaller portion, but it is trickier because, one, you are relying on sales to keep that information current in terms of timing and amount, but also, of course, the burden, as I mentioned, to go in and actually convert those amounts into actual resource requirements. In doing so, that's a huge step in being less reactionary. There are always going to be things that come up quickly or things that we want to be able to react to. I always had a mantra, I never want to say no. What we try to do is you set some governance pieces in place to make sure that even the data alone can't tell you the whole story. We try to come together through points of interlock to talk to the salespeople, to talk to the project manager, to say, help me understand more. That's what a good resource manager would do. Help me understand more of the context. Is there a risk? Not a risk, but a good thing that this project will be extended. Is there a chance that this might end early? So you're picking up on some of those clues. Some of that is process and organizational structure that we usually advise folks to establish so that you get a little bit of the human touch and interpretation of what's going on in addition to what just the cold hard data is telling you as well.
Are companies aligning their processes enough to allow PSA teams to predict and provide?
Biggest hurdle when we talk about process is control. Oftentimes, as organizations are growing or shifting their focus, trying to get to a more modern, sophisticated resource management approach and automation with it, the question always comes up of control. These are my people or this is my practice. I'm used to deciding who goes where when. I don't want somebody else making that decision because I'll have to live with the consequences of an unsatisfied customer or over budget work or something like that. What we try to advocate, and certainly Kimball supports, is everybody can have it both ways. What we're trying to do is get senior delivery leaders out of weekly staffing calls and out of weekly staffing decisions. What we're not trying to do is remove them from the critical decision making of who goes where. What they'll find once they accept this direction that they need to go in is, great, I don't have to get involved in every single decision of everything that's going on. But what's going to come to me is escalations or summaries of what decisions were made in a given week. This is, again, one thing that great automation can support. But getting them to that point of feeling trustful of the people involved, of the resource managers making the decisions on their behalf, knowing that they still have veto power, they still have override power, but giving up that control and knowing that they're going to have the visibility and transparency of what's going on by not directly being involved is probably one of the biggest hurdles. But once we get them there, I'd say it's smooth sailing after that. But we know we've arrived and transformed or changed the way the organization's going to operate.
Is automation of process leading to simpler and more effective processes?
This is very germane to the work we're doing and definitely germane to the work we're doing with Kimball. Of course, Kimball will say that it's very process-centric, and it truly is. That Kimball heritage really comes from professional services and consulting delivery. They are practitioners who designed a system to suit that model, not to try to force-fit it into the model. However, we still take an approach in every one of our projects where, given the opportunity to, some customers just need to get it going quickly, but given the opportunity, we certainly want to start the conversation with, what do you need the process to be? What do you want to function as a business? Now, we're going to, of course, share with them what the industry thinks they should be doing in their situation. So there's an aspect of industry best practice. There's how they want to operate, given some of their needs and constraints. And then there's how the system operates. We like to start the conversation with that mix of how do you need to operate and relative to industry practice almost all the time. Then we can go over to Kimball and it can be supported. You know, Kimball, of course, can configure and do things multiple ways. What we don't want to get into a conversation is, how do you want to do it? Here's three options. How do you want to do it? We really want to start the conversation is, let's keep the system over here for a minute. Let's talk about this process. Let's get a sense of how mature or not it is. Let's figure out what the right way to do it is. Then let's now overlay the automation to match it. Our success rate on that is 99%. We'll always find a way to automate the process. But what's worse is to automate the wrong process. That's far more damaging.
When we think about digital transformation, one of its goals is greater automation throughout the whole of the supply chain. Are you seeing customers wanting more detail and integration around resources and resource management?
I definitely see an increase in the integration of the information the clients want from the systems themselves. The most common area is more on the back end right now, the whole billing and invoicing part, where many larger clients of our clients, if you will, don't want to receive a paper invoice in the mail. They want you to go into their procurement system and actually load the hours. They want you to load the invoice. They want all that back end automated, and they want it done through their system. So that back end integration is getting a lot of attention and causes a lot of pain for people that do that. PSA is starting to get better at providing that. In the midst of the project, I see more integration, not so much on the resourcing. We definitely want to keep that a little closer to the vest within our companies, but what they are looking for is more integration to the project behavior, status, rate, risks and assumptions and status reporting and things like that. We have to deliver status reporting and budget information to our clients. What often happens is we create the one internal status report and budget, and then we swivel our chair and then go create the external one that we send to our clients. Those days need to come to an end, and that's where you're talking about business integration. It's information integration. Let's generate the information one time, and then let's send it to multiple audiences in different ways. And I do see Kimball starting to get across more points of contact with customer, is being able to recognize that there are multiple parties that need to see this information, and we need means by which to get that data to them, formatted or unformatted, as well as an ability to filter out certain pieces of data that you wouldn't show one audience versus another.
If I were to ask you the top three things that companies need to start thinking about as they review the way they resource, what would they be?
I would say the first thing that they have to do is make sure that they have the best data that they can. Data is the most important, because when people question the data, it makes the house of cards crumble a bit. The minute you have one project that is anticipated and people can't interpret or understand what the requirements are of that project, throws your whole capacity model a little out of kilter, because you're not quite there. There's always going to be a question mark in your head. Should we go find more resources or not? Completeness of data is probably one of the number one priorities. Second is creating these interlocks, as I call them, and it's something we emphasize a lot. It's really the process and or cultural component that goes with the automation, is that while we have good data, we have to sit down with our counterparts and interpret that data together. When you're my manager and I'm coming to you as a practice leader to say, I have this data, and this data tells me I need to go hire 5 people in the next 3 months. You have to believe that data. If you don't, you're not going to authorize me to hire those 5 people. Those interlocks and building those trusted exchanges with the data, and that people are interpreting the same way, is critical and one of the hardest things to overcome. Lastly, it is a data-intensive thing. I try to emphasize that a lot, that we not only have to curate the data going in, but we have to serve up that data, formulate that data, report on that data pretty actively, daily, weekly, monthly. What we recommend is that people are making decisions daily, weekly, monthly, which means I need information on what to do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Once we have that information, we can rely on it. We know how to interpret it together, even across our different roles and departments. That, to me, are the three elements that really can take you from average, somewhat tactical resource management process to one that's really driving your business and leading you where you need to go and managing your profitability to go with that.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to one of a series of podcasts dedicated to sharing best practices for professional services organizations. These can be found on www.kimballapps.com.